Hey guys, Jim Cox, and I'm here today with an interview with Angela. We had recently, I think we've been connected for a while, but I noticed on LinkedIn she has a new book going to the publisher about vegan transformation, the reality with a positive view of a controversial issue, and asked her to talk a little bit about that and the work that she does. So, Angela, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a psychologist, a coach, and a writer. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in vegan activism.
Sure. I actually started as a journalism major, so I've always had a love of writing. But about midway through college, taking some psychology courses, I just knew that that was the path I was meant to go on. So I ended up pursuing a PhD in clinical psychology. And for the past 25 years, I've worked, with clients doing psychotherapy, both individual and some small group work, helping with just a variety of things like trauma, stress, all the things that many of us face in this modern world, depression, anxiety. And, it's been really deeply fulfilling work. But then, over time, I became more aware of what I'd say, like you'd call social justice issues. It started for me when I became vegetarian about 17 years ago. I'd seen a program on PBS about workers in a meat processing plant. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I at the time was working as a psychologist in a pain management program, and many of the people in the program were injured workers. So I had sort of a sensitivity to what workers go through when they have not great work environments or they're injured. And in this particular program, the workers in the meat processing plant, most of them were immigrants. Many of them just financially did not have a lot of power. And so they were often injured due to the nature of their work and forced to continue working and not report the injuries. And just the whole setup, it just seemed, it was only a brief program, but just what I saw made me think about how my food got to me. It made me start to think about injustices in the system and that, like, I'm not sure I want to support this. And before that, I would never have thought of becoming vegetarian or vegan because I grew up in Iowa, the Midwest, where, we believed you had to eat meat and dairy to survive. So, and I wasn't a cook. I wasn't a very healthy eater at all. I kind of ate a lot of comfort food and convenience foods and sweets. But just seeing that program was like a turning point. It made me decide I'm going to go to the bookstore. I bought my first vegetarian cookbook. And although I was not a cook, I made a vegetarian lasagna the very next day. And I loved it. And it just, it opened up a new world to me. It made me realize that plant-based food could be delicious. So it wasn't like I was depriving myself. And then I kept reading. I went to the, at the time, this was 2006, so I went to the library at that time and read every book I could on vegetarianism, veganism. And so I learned about all the stuff that happens to the animals. And when I took that in, I just knew I couldn't eat that way anymore. So within a few months, I committed to being vegetarian and not eating meat. And then it actually took some years later to become vegan, to really take on that additional commitment, because I think for me, the social situations were hard to speak up and say, oh, I'm not going to have dairy. It took another breakthrough of me really connecting to what happens in the dairy and egg industries to say, yeah, enough, that if I want to be true to my values, I have to really take a stand here and overcome my own blocks to living this lifestyle. And so I did that. And as I did that, when I became vegan, I just became committed that I wanted to share this beyond myself. It went beyond like a personal lifestyle decision to wanting to bring my psychology background to help other people. Because I saw the health crisis that we're in, you know, I'm vegan because of what I realize is happening to the animals, but I also see how it affects our health. I see how it affects the planet. And so I've been on a journey to discover how to bring my skills and background to help other people move to this lifestyle and thrive with this lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And the book is part of how I'm doing that.
Awesome. Awesome. Now you mentioned your experience in observing workers in the meat industry. For people who are interested in learning more, a really good book that I read about this is called Porkopolis. It basically is done as a study, I guess you would say an anthropological study of a town in a meatpacking plant. And so it looks at it from the standpoint of not just the environment and the animals, but kind of the people that work there and the people that are around it and kind of the negative feedback loops that you get. But yeah, I mean, when you look at like what people go through in terms of working in those kinds of environments, it's nothing you would wish on your worst enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think most of us, if we really saw what that work was like, you know, we wouldn't want to go anywhere near it. And yeah. I haven't read the book you mentioned. It sounds worth reading. And I had read the book Slaughterhouse, which is written by a journalist who spoke to so many people that worked in that industry and just realizing what their lives are like and then what the reality of the whole process is like. Mm-hmm. I would think even if someone didn't have compassion for animals, they wouldn't want to eat the food that was a product of that environment.
Yeah, and actually I interviewed her for this show.
Oh, you did, Gail.
And her, yeah. Yep, and her podcast is in this. What's her last name? It's Gail.
E-I-S-N-I-T-Z. It's something like that. I don't know how to pronounce it right.
But yeah, it's in the, it's one of the other podcasts that I did. But yeah, it's very, very insightful. And it takes a toll on the reporter too.
Yes.
Right? And just observing and kind of dealing with that. So when you look at like you're working in terms of as a psychologist with individuals, how do you you deal with a lot of trauma that people have suffered? Like, how does food or diet create trauma for individuals, but it's also kind of societal trauma? Like, how do those things relate to each other, you think?
Yeah, that's a big question. I think there's a lot of different levels that you could answer that. I think on one level, there's a truth that how we treat animals is reflected also in how we treat each other and the planet. You know, it's certainly known on a individual level that people that abuse animals are more likely to cause violence towards people. And so there's this connection, you know, between how we treat animals and how we treat one another. So there's, I think, an underlying societal trauma from just how we turn a blind eye to the treatment of animals. It's there under the surface. Some part of us knows it's not right. And yet we're participating in a system that most of us, if we were to really connect with our values and also to really let ourselves see what happens, we wouldn't want to be, most of us would not want to be part of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people that might not care, but I would think the majority of people have some compassion or some sense of justice. And given research that's been done that has shown most people, even those that eat meat, want to know that animals are treated humanely, and that's not what happens. So there's that level of trauma. I think for those of us that do look deeper, and witness what happens, it certainly can be traumatic to see it. You know, as you mentioned, the reporters, the investigators, the people that seek it out, and those that work in the setting who maybe learn to become desensitized, but still are probably nonetheless affected with some form of trauma from what they're doing. So I think there's a lot of different levels that this whole industry and approach to using animals as commodities ends up being traumatic.
Yeah. And it's interesting because kind of the capitalist system at like the turn of the 20th century, you know, there was kind of a detachment from ethics and morals from the scientific approach of the economy, mm-hmm. you know, that detachment. And that, to me, that kind of, as a historian, that kind of facilitates this to happen. Like, I think if you hadn't done that, if people were actually more spiritual, more moral, that we wouldn't have this kind of a system that kind of fosters this kind of abuse.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. Hmm.
So tell us a little bit about your new book, because it's actually, you, when we talked, you said it was a book about positive view of veganism and kind of positive change. So I think we all could use some more optimism these days. So tell us a little bit about your insights.
Sure. Yeah. Well, one thing that had struck me is that the view of veganism from those who are not vegan is often, some are curious and intrigued, but many people view it as restrictive or depriving or extreme. And I know I thought that same thing, you know, years ago before I had gone down my path. And I also was struck by when I became vegan and I really awakened to like all the benefits of this lifestyle, the health benefits, the emotional benefits of aligning with my values, the benefits for animals and the planet. I was in some different communities, spiritual communities, coaching communities, psychology communities, where I was the only vegan. And I just wondered, how is it that, you know, so many people that are very conscious, caring people that care about the planet and care about animals, they haven't also made this connection. So I was somewhat thinking about that disconnect when I began the research for my book. And what I did was I surveyed and interviewed vegans about the mind-body-spirit changes that they experienced along with adopting a vegan lifestyle. And, you know, I knew that I wasn't the only one that had had what I thought was a transformational experience. I felt that many people I communicated with that were vegan, you know, have shared those kinds of transformations. So I wanted to look at that more closely. And so through the surveys and interviews, there were 7 core themes that came out that were positive transformations, because I was focused more on the positive changes. I did ask about the challenges too and address that also, because certainly it can be challenging to be vegan in a world that isn't yet vegan. But I also wanted to capture what was good from a psychological standpoint about it, because there's been a lot about the health benefits, but not as much about, well, how does it affect us emotionally? And so there were 7 key factors that came out through across the surveys and interviews that were part of what made a life-changing difference for the people that I interviewed. So, and one of them is just simply living aligned with our values, you know, because so often we're not even connected to what our values are, mm-hmm. or the ways that we're not living aligned with them. So there's this, sometimes this underlying kind of cognitive dissonance that we don't even acknowledge to ourselves, that there was a freedom and a peace for the people I studied in my research, you know, the vegans that said, you know, now I feel this weight lifted that I didn't even know was there. I feel a peace that I never anticipated. So that is like one of the key factors. It's not just the food you put in your body, but the reality that the food you're putting in your body comes from a more compassionate, cruelty-free, and a sustainable way.
So that cognitive dissonance like allows people to live knowing what's going on in terms of with animals and with meat, but pushes it down. But even though it's pushed down, it still weighs on them and it kind of eats away at the soul. Is that kind of what?
Yeah, you know, I think people experience that differently than, you know, each of us is different. But for many of us, because we hold this value of compassion and kindness and treating all beings, you know, in cruelty-free ways as much as possible, the reality that we're eating meat and at some level, even if we haven't looked at the process very closely, we know it involves something dying. We know that, yeah. You know, we know there has to be something that is happening. So for many of us, there is some degree of cognitive dissonance. And one of the ways that we handle cognitive dissonance, which is, you know, basically when we have values that are in conflict with our behaviors, is basically what that is. You know, one of the ways we handle it is we can change our behavior to match our values, which is when you reduce meat or become vegetarian or vegan, reduce eating meat or become vegetarian or vegan. But the other option is to just change your beliefs or change your perceptions around the whole situation so that it doesn't seem to be in conflict. You know, well, the animals really aren't treated that bad, or we're meant to eat animals. You know, we come up with justifications that make it okay somehow.
And marketing does that, like happy cows,
yes,
free range and, you know, keywords.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and so some of the other, you know, key things were living more compassionately. Sometimes we compartmentalize our compassion. We cut off, we feel compassion for some, but not for others. So extending compassion more fully and not just limiting it to certain beings, like our dogs and cats are worthy of compassion, but the pigs and cows aren't. That was another thing that brought peace for a lot of people when they open their compassion, even though it can be painful too, but it also lets you live a fuller life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of the others, most were finding a lot of purpose. I can't say the number of people that I either surveyed or interviewed that had created businesses or some sort of advocacy work, you know, or volunteering that let them express this new passion in their life. They wanted to share it with others, whether it be to help animals, help other people, help the planet. And it just became a consuming sense of purpose and meaning for so many of the people. Hmm. Yeah. And I guess the remaining ones, authentic fulfillment. The people that I interviewed that were vegan were not necessarily like happy all the time. Learning about tough things in the world, it does bring tough emotions. But it was a fulfillment that wasn't about just being, you know, uplifted all the time, but rather holding all the emotions that we humans experience, living authentically and feeling a fulfillment that you're living the best life you can, you know, with what you know, and fulfillment that you're doing what you can to make a positive difference. Mm-hmm. And part of that too was eating foods that actually nourish your own body. Plants are anti-inflammatory. And when we eat a more whole food version of a vegan diet, that also nourishes our brain and nervous system. So we can feel better emotionally.
Hmm. Yeah. That authentic fulfillment, you know, that reminds me of, you know, when I was in college and one of the things that really stuck with me was the concept of existentialism. It's the idea that you have free choice, but you also have responsibility. And one of the things that happens is once you know something, if you're authentic about having that control and that responsibility, is you have to do something with it. And so, you know, living that way, I think definitely raises the bar in terms of the energy of the life that you lead. Yeah.
Yeah, I relate to that. And I think existentialism fits really well with some of what came through in my interviews, just that idea, like Viktor Frankl, you know, just that idea of having a strong why that helps you have a purpose, and it goes beyond just a surface level happiness or always getting your way or whatever. It's, it's a much deeper sort of meaning that drives many of the people that are passionate about this lifestyle. Yeah. And the last two, so far I've said values, compassion, purpose, authentic fulfillment. And actually there were three more. So one was meaningful connections. And that was connecting with other people that share the same values. There's something about, you know, like for example, you and I connecting here, we might not know each other if it weren't for this kind of common shared interest. The number of people I've met from across the globe that I would never have met if we didn't share this bond is amazing. It just, it's something that just helps you connect with people because you know they care about something or see something that you see, and it really matters. And at the same time, the people I interviewed also had to learn how to navigate differences, which, you know, obviously not everybody sees things the same way. So learning how to navigate those challenging situations where others don't yet see what you see or they disagree with you, and how to still maintain connection, even though you may not see eye to eye.
That's interesting. I never thought about that aspect of it. But it's, you know, from like just looking at talking about establishing meaningful connections, you know, one of the things about the kind of the system that we live in, it kind of really drives people to live in isolation, you know, and it drives people away from building those kinds of connections in terms of their life. And so as a way to counteract that, you know, I can see where that has a lot of appeal and a lot of power. Because there's, I think at the core, when you look, especially after COVID, you look at like what happened. And, you know, people don't want to be alone anymore. They don't want to feel isolated by their job or by their environment that they're in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's, I think the culture is really set up with social media and other things for us to feel more disconnected or to relate in more superficial ways. Or so having something that is a driving purpose and passion and commitment, I think that automatically leads to a deeper connection. When you do talk to other people, you can relate on a deeper level that goes beyond the surface.
Very good. And then what were the other, the last two?
So the last two were health empowerment and then spirituality and interconnectedness. The health empowerment was a number of people had dramatically changed their health, whether they became vegan for health reasons or for the animals. There were many people that had had serious medical issues that suddenly they were freed from. And to realize, like, I have never been told I had power over my own health. I was always told just to rely on doctors and medicines, and which can be very helpful sometimes. But, you know, no one was told really that their diet or becoming plant-based could lead to so many dramatic changes in, you know, overcoming diabetes or heart disease or sometimes fibromyalgia, other disorders that people just thought they had to live with. So realizing they had empowerment, it, you know, it wasn't so much even just that their health changed, as wonderful as that was. It was feeling like they could be more proactive in their own well-being.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, knowing a lot of people in the medical field who have retired, you know, doctors are not really trained. I think they take one course in the role that food plays, and having been to a number of doctors with my spouse, you know, the issue of food is completely downplayed in terms of medical issues. And so they, you know, they really don't, they're not trained in that. And it just doesn't, that has to, that I think would be a really good improvement when you look at, like, people talk about healthcare reform. Like, that's the number one issue, is educating doctors on the role that positive role that food could play, you know?
I agree with you. And I think the fairly new field of lifestyle medicine is hopefully a movement in that direction, and hopefully will become more mainstream, where they do advocate for a very plant-centered diet along with other lifestyle changes. I think that's really important, because we have among, you know, the shortest life expectancy in our country compared to other, you know, Western or similar economic status countries. We do worse in terms of some of our healthcare and longevity measures. So,
and that's ironic considering the higher cost that we pay.
Exactly. It's very ironic. And it's just really a tragedy when people have health issues that affect their life. They can't often live life quite as fully, you know. So if there's anything that could help it, it'd be good for people to be able to integrate that, you know, and reclaim their vitality and well-being whenever possible. Mm-hmm. So that was really a positive part of it. And then, you know, last of all, the spirituality and interconnectedness. Not everybody identified as spiritual, but some did. And some who did felt like their spirituality had deepened through becoming vegan, not eating cruelty anymore, eating foods that were lighter for the mind, body, and spirit. And then many said something along the lines of, I feel connected with all of life, you know, whether they were spiritual or not, they felt this deeper sense of connectedness with nature, with all sentient beings. They didn't have to disconnect anymore. They realized, I'm part of this kind of more unified whole. And that seemed to be a discovery that many people that I surveyed or interviewed shared, regardless of where they were in terms of spirituality. Mm.
And that's something that we really need in order to really kind of face the climate crisis head on, is for people to come to that kind of spiritual moment.
That our choices matter, that in how we treat the climate comes back to how, you know, our well-being is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, you know, and all of the pieces together, you know, created this sense of like just a more authentic, fulfilled, interconnected life, you know, instead of feeling so isolated, feeling more connected to other people, to themselves, to animals, to the planet. That was what many experienced. And not every vegan experiences that, but it's a possibility that can unfold when you do align with your values and eat in ways that nurture your mind, body, and spirit and the planet.
Definitely. So when is the book's been sent to the printer? Obviously, it's the beginning of a process. When do you think the you don't have a title for the book yet, you said?
I do, although because it's going to be a year, I'm always like, oh, do I say the title or not? But but yes, it's being it's sent to my publisher, who is Lantern Publishing and Media. And and it's, you know, basically, I know the basic title is The Vegan Transformation, A Mind, Body, Spirit Journey to Healing Yourself and the World. And it's about, you know, transformation that goes beyond just like, I look great because I'm, you know, lost weight. It's about a transformation that's, again, that mind, body, spirit that goes beyond ourselves to ripple out into the larger world beyond us.
That's awesome. So it'll be about a year, but I look forward to getting that and reading.
Yeah, me too. I know it is a process. I had considered, you know, whether the self-publishing or publishing, you know, route, because there's certainly pros and cons of either. But when I got the opportunity to work with Lantern, of course, I jumped at it, and I'm really excited. So there will be like some editing and things that have to happen and before it comes out, but it is going to be there, and I'm excited. And you know, as it gets closer, I'll hopefully do more speaking and more podcasts like this to share more about it, because I'm really excited about it.
Yep. So how do you after writing a book and kind of going through that creative process, I assume it takes a lot of energy. what do you do now? Like, how do you, is there kind of a deflation that occurs after that? I've never written anything, so I'm just curious. Is it, do you have to take time off in order to kind of put yourself back together after going through that, or?
Yeah, I plan to. You know, I haven't yet, but later this month, my husband and I are going to go away for a vacation, and I think I really need to. I've had some other projects that got put off while I was intensely working on that, so I haven't yet felt like I could quite breathe and realize like that huge project is, you know, largely done. So I do feel that need to recover because it is intense. I've been working on it in some way or form since spring of 2021. That's when I started the surveys and the research. But the kind of intense writing process was pretty much full time since last September. And so it's really kind of consumed my days and nights. And
I imagine.
Kind of ready to breathe and just like, I don't know, let some fresh air in and, I don't know, just be outside a little bit.
Good. So what, you have a coaching business as well, is that right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, I'm really in a transition. I had just recently wound down my psychotherapy practice after many years. And so right now I'm in the middle of starting on my next phase of what's next. And the first thing that I've been working on is actually an online course. Me and a vegan coach that I know, we're creating an online course that's actually for health coaches, but who want help with how to help their clients transition to a vegan lifestyle. So it's a in-depth course with, you know, not only the kind of practical and nutritional aspects of helping someone transition to a vegan lifestyle, but also I'm covering the emotional and social challenges and how to kind of thrive through those and some of the behavioral aspects of, you know, making a change and sticking to it. So that's kind of my current project. And then probably in a couple months, I'll be able to say more what's beyond that.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like another good sized project. So, but definitely like we talked about with the need in healthcare, I mean, it's definitely, needed to help facilitate kind of the changes taking place. But I have to say, I mean, over the last couple of years, it seems like things have really accelerated in terms of the advance of veganism.
Yeah.
I mean, is that kind of your sense or am I?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, sometimes you run into moments where you feel like, oh gosh, has anything changed? But really, when you look around more closely, there are so many ways that you see it growing, you know, in terms of, you know, not only products and businesses, you know, being on LinkedIn, we see so many vegan professionals and just so many amazing stories about how it is growing. So.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time to chat today. If people want to learn more about the work that you do, is there a way for them to reach out to you?
Sure. Either I can be found through LinkedIn with my name, Angela Crawford, PhD, or my website, which is angelacrawfordphd.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. And as the book gets closer to release, we'll have to talk again. I'm sure in a year, things will have evolved even farther.
Yes, definitely. Well, I would love that.
Maybe we could talk about your course at that point too.
Sounds great. Well, I really appreciate you inviting me and I appreciate what you do to help raise awareness of so many important issues.
No, thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.